And welcome back, everybody, to another big week of the Jerry Lawler Show. Thank you so much for joining us during this crazy time that we're still going through. Hopefully we can provide you with some fun today, because we have a show that I'm so excited and honored and privileged to be a part of here. As, when it comes to pro wrestling announcer-wrestler duos, I don't know there's ever been another one that had that Howard Cosell-Muhammad Ali dynamic quite as much as Jerry the King Lawler and the great Lance Russell back in the day in Memphis. And I am joined on the line by the King and Lance Russell's son, Shane. How is everybody today?
Well, I'm great. And I'm excited to have Shane. Shane, how you doing, buddy?
I am doing great. Of course, I think everybody is being quarantined. I'm doing the same. So, we're trying to fight through that whole thing right now. But hey, it would be not proper of me if I didn't start out by saying hello again, everybody. Shane Russell and Jerry Lawler right along ringside with another big day of championship wrestling.
Oh wow, boy, does that bring back memories? You're right. It's amazing.
Hey.
We. Sean and I have done, I bet we mentioned Lance's name in every podcast that we've done so far somehow or other, you know, because Lance was such a huge part of my career and such a huge part of Memphis wrestling. I've said it many times, Shane, Lance and Dave were Memphis wrestling. I mean, the wrestlers came and went, but Lance and Dave, they were the constants. They were there every single week, and they were really what people got up on Saturday mornings and tune in for, just to see. I know, before I was in the business, that's what I got up. I turned on my TV to see Lance and Dave sitting there. That was what made the show every week.
It's something else. I tell you, as a kid growing up, watching Dad on TV I can vividly remember, early on going to my mom and saying, Mom, are they going to hurt Dad? And worrying about Dad because all these big guys are yelling at him and all this. And so, Dad would come home and explain to me what was going on. And then of course, Jerry Lawler came around and that changed everything, So the interaction between Dad and Jerry was just great. You guys just did a great job together.
Now, let me ask you this, Shane. Give us just a little bit of the historical background. Where were you guys living when Lance started doing the Memphis wrestling? What were your first memories of? Were you born in Memphis, or were you born up in Trenton, or where were you born?
No, that's a great question. Dad and Mom lived in Jackson, Tennessee, and that's where Dad started, in the radio business, and then did some TV up there, and then they ended up moving down to Memphis. I want to say it was about 57 or 58. Both my brother and sister were born in Jackson, and then I came along in 59, and we lived in a little house right off of Perkins Road. I think everybody in Memphis knows Perkins Road, but we lived right over there.
On Deering?
And, on Deering, yep, just off of, actually, when they first moved here, they lived on Perkins, and it's funny, they bought a house that was right behind them, and so when they moved, all they did, they'd carry the furniture out the backyard, hand it over the fence to their neighbor, and they put it in the house behind them. So, so they moved over on Deering. But,
let me stop you right there for just a second, because that just rings a bell in my head. Lance had a kind of a history of making moves to, like, sort of next door. Didn't he come to visit you down in near Pensacola and then actually move in almost right next door to you?
He did. I think that's another great one. My mom and dad, when my wife and I, when we moved down to Gulf Breeze, Florida, about 25 years ago, dad and mom really loved it down there. They go, oh, God, if you could ever find a place, my wife was a realtor, if you could ever find a place down there, we'd love to buy one for a second home. We showed them all these different houses. Well, lo and behold, a house three doors down from me opened up, and they ended up buying that. So I always made the joke, wait a minute, the kid's supposed to move away, the parents aren't supposed to follow them. So
right.
and uh But as it turned out, it was a great time for us because, as you know, Mom and Dad, of course, you know, got older and the health deteriorated. And so we were right there to help them out to the end. So turned out great.
Yeah, it really did. But let's go back then to Memphis. And like you were born in 1959. What year did Lance start doing the wrestling on Channel 13?
Oh, gee, he was probably
in the 60s, right?
Yeah, I was going to say 61, 62, maybe somewhere right in that range.
Right.
When he did it, and I was just a squirt back then. And then, of course, as I got older, I would come down to the studio and sit up. You remember Channel 13 studio, Jerry?
Oh,
and
sure.
I would sit up. I'd sit up on those stairs going up to the director's booth, and yeah. So I could get a good view. And actually, I'll never forget. I tell people this story; they don't believe it. But I was there the day when golly, and I can't think of that. Who was the big muscle-bound Memphis State football player guy?
Mike Stark.
When he hit you on the head with the Coke bottle, I was there on the stairs that day when that happened.
Oh my gosh!
And, I'll never forget that either. That was just crazy.
Well, that was the day. I guess I had come out there with Lance, and Lance was really putting over Mike Stark. Actually, Lance knew Mike Stark really well, you know, because Mike was a well-known Memphis State football player, and so he was wanting to. Lance was trying to introduce him to everybody to let the kid get a start in wrestling, and you know, to try to get trained and that sort of thing. And of course, I went out there and said, "Hey, do you have a wrestling license?" And he said, "No." Well, and I said, "You know, well, you can't get in a ring without a wrestling license. What are you even doing here? You're wasting everybody's time." And so that's where as Mike started walking off, he said that he had he couldn't play football anymore because of knee problems, but he thought he could wrestle. And I remember making the statement, "Oh, so your knees are too hurt for you to play football, but you think you're going to be able to wrestle, right?" And so anyway, right. I embarrassed him a little bit, and he started walking away. And we talked about this for years. I came from behind with the steel chair that I was sitting on. I folded up, and I hit Mike in his knees, you know, from behind. And the cameraman missed the shot. He kept the shot on Lance, and Lance's expression and Lance's face and the sound of me hitting him with the chair, in retrospect, was probably better than if they had saw me actually hit Mike with the chair, because it was turned out so great. I mean, as Mike Stark walked away, the camera stayed on Lance and I, and then I picked up the chair and I walked, you know, I went towards Mike and I went out of the frame, and then the camera was just on Lance's face, and you hear bang. And Lance's face, Lance, you know, he grimaced and he was watching and he went, "Ooh," you know, just typical Lance. And then, of course, that was then later on when in my match, Mike Stark came back out and hit me over the head with a Coke bottle. But, yeah, that thing where you were sitting there watching that, Lance's face, we talked about it over the years. We talked about, first, we were upset that the guy missed the shot, but then we realized that just keeping it on Lance's face and his expression, the way he sold it, was probably better than getting the shot.
Yeah, yeah. I'd never forget that as long as I live. When that happened, that was just great.
Did you get to come down? You know what? I remember being there and watching some stuff on those same steps that you were on after. You know, I was. When I first got in the business, that's where we were. That's where we were doing the Saturday morning show there on Channel 13, and I got to hang around sometimes and sit on those steps and watch a show that everybody in Memphis back in the day was familiar with, Savad and Fantastic Features. You remember that?
Oh, do I remember it? I never went down to the studio to watch it, but. I can remember when Dad, and I don't know if people know this or not, but Dad actually, he came up with the idea of Fantastic Features. You know, he being a program director at WHBQ, he looked at the ratings. He saw how there was, you know, there was really nothing on at that time slot. And, of course, oh, what's his name? Savai. What's his real name? Davis. Is it
Davis?
It wasn't Stan. Yeah. He knew he was over at the Malco Theater, you know, with that gimmick of Savai, and he thought, well, heck, I'm gonna put this whole fantastic feature showing old grade B scary movies, you know, on and using Savai. And he tells a story about going down to Overton Park and doing the opening scene with the hearse and the casket opening and the smoke coming out. He told a great story about how they did that, you know, how many takes it took them and all that. What a great concept it was. Fantastic features.
Yeah, I remember the guy's name was Watson Davis.
Watson Davis, that's it.
And Lance and he got together with, I think he wasn't that crazy about doing it because he had never been on TV or anything before. Lance sort of talked him into doing that, and they wanted to come up with some kind of a crazy name for this character. It turned out to be, I mean, I heard him described as a hillbilly vampire because they dressed him up like Dracula or like a vampire. But he had such an amazing Southern accent, so he was the hillbilly vampire there on the TV. But so his last name was Davis, and Lance, and he said, "Well, let's just what would your name sound like if we spelled it backwards?" So Davis spelled backwards came up with Savad, and they said, "There's your name." So that's how that character was created. And like you said, Lance had told me the story of how they put some, you know, they put some dry ice down inside this casket so that whenever Savad opened up the casket, the smoke comes out of the thing. And Lance said, I don't know, 12 or 13 different takes. Lance basically directed and did that whole shot that became so, you know, became so famous there as the opening of the Fantastic Features. And that show, I mean, Savad became a huge star. He was bigger than the wrestling stars at the time. He would do personal appearances and draw thousands of people just to come out and see him. You know, it was amazing. And then you're right. That was all a creation of your dad there. It was great.
Yeah, it was great. He, you know, another thing that people don't know about dad had a great mind for TV. And I got to credit, you know, Jerry Jarrett and you, Jerry, for recognizing that in Dad. And you know, the combination between his knowledge of TV and his wrestling knowledge, you know, I think it worked out great. But, you know, another thing he came up with was the first fishing show with Bill Dance.
Oh, really?
And not many people knew that, but... you know, I was really happy to see at Dad's funeral, Bill actually sent some flowers in, and his card read, you know, without Lance Russell, there probably would not be a Bill Dance show or a Bill Dance around, like, you know, like you credit Dad with too, Jerry. But, he came up with his idea about putting, you know, a guy out fishing on the lake, and Bill had such a great charismatic personality, you know, that just worked at the time.
Yeah, and that really, like you said, Bill Dance and that show that your dad created was probably one of the first fishing shows ever anywhere in the country. And then, of course, that became a big deal. I still follow Bill Dance on Twitter. I kind of keep up with him there on Twitter, and he's still out there fishing and doing great. And you're right, there's another guy that can thank Lance Russell for the great career that he had. And, of course, Dave Brown, you talked about Lance, you know, realizing and seeking talent out. I mean, Lance was the one that you know, put Dave Brown on there as the as a co-host, and Dave had no experience in doing something like that. He was just in radio at the time, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I think everybody knows that story. You know, Dave was in radio, and Dad said, "Hey, if you want to, you know, further your career, this would be a good move for you coming over to TV." And heck, you know, rest is history from there. And, you know, I think the other thing, Jerry, too, that, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I think he had the idea of putting the Saturday morning wrestling in the time slot where it was at 11 o'clock on Saturday morning, just because, again, he saw the need for something other than cartoons. And right. Am I right in that, Jerry? Have you heard that story before?
I have heard that story. You're right about that. In my situation, we were living in Ohio. My family were living in Ohio from, we moved up there in like 1957, and we didn't move back to Memphis until 1965. And so when we came back to Memphis, that was my first time of seeing, you know, your dad and seeing Saturday morning wrestling and that sort of thing. And my dad was a big wrestling fan as well. So we immediately started watching the Saturday morning wrestling. But I mean, you know, I was just a kid in high school and I was a big fan. My dad was a big fan. And at that time when we moved back to Memphis, and that was my first exposure to Lance and Dave, I mean, it was already, you know, Saturday morning wrestling was already entrenched. It was the biggest thing going in Memphis at that time already when we moved back in 65, you know. So I don't remember exactly when it was. I wasn't there to know about when Lance decided that Saturday morning would be a good slot for wrestling. But I know it did work out. It became the, and you know, you would always hear stories about kids saying, oh man, a lot of kids would say, man, well, I wanted to watch cartoons on Saturday morning, but boy, my parents would, at 11 o'clock, bang, they would flip over and they would make us watch wrestling. And I mean, it became such a, how old were you in like when 65 or through 69 or all that kind of time? I mean, did you realize how big it was in Memphis at that time?
No, I'm not at that time. You know, I don't know if anybody realized how big it was at that time, but I did not know. Well, of course, the ratings it got were, unbelievable. I don't know what the ratings were, but I know they were just astronomical for that time slot.
Yeah, it really was. And of course, then when we made the move, and we switched over to Channel 5, and I don't know, I mean, I'm sure that Jerry and I would have, Jerry Jarrett mainly, would have made the move because, he had such a falling out with Nick Gulas, who was the original promoter, and of course, Nick Gulas had the contract with Channel 13 and with your dad, with Lance, and so when Jerry and I broke away from Nick Gulas, that was a big risk. But we had talked about, I never forget, I went over and talked to, just really walked in off the street, Shane, and asked to speak with the program director at Channel 5 on the NBC studios, NBC affiliate there in Memphis. And I got the, you know, of course they knew who I was and everything. So I got a meeting with him and I told him that, I said, you know, I'm really, Jerry Jarrett, my partner, and I are breaking away from the current promoter, Nick Gulas. We're gonna need a place to start our own TV show on Saturday mornings, and we'd love to come here to Channel 5. And you know, they said at the time, said, well, I mean, you know, Channel 13, that's the biggest show in the whole market, and the only way that I was able to really pique their interest was because Jerry and I had already talked to your dad and to Dave. I said, well, I firmly believe, I can't say for certain, but I believe that if we make this move and we could come here to your station, I think Lance Russell and Dave Brown may come with us. And that was really what swung the deal. Because like I said, Dave was the top weatherman in the market. And of course, Lance was not only the, you know, he was the top host there on the wrestling show, but you know, he was a well-respected program director. I mean, he was the head honcho at Channel 13 at the time. And so when they thought that they, I think, you know, when the manager there at Channel 5 thought, oh my gosh, we can get Lance Russell and Dave Brown to move to our station along with the wrestling show, you know, that swung the deal for us.
Yeah, I remember those times very well. There were a lot of sleepless nights in the Russell household going on, trying to decide what to do. And, You know, and if you sit back and you think about it, you know, Dad, here's Dad who had 20 years with RKO General, the, you know, the parent company of the station. And he had a great future with the company and great benefits and steady income. And then to get up and move like that, it really took a lot of soul searching on he and my mom's part. And I can remember them asking the kids, you know, asking us what we thought about it. And so, it was a very troubling time at that time. But Dad, he always said he definitely made the right move. He never looked back and really enjoyed it.
Yeah, that was 1977 when we broke away. And of course, when Jerry and I started our show on Channel 5, Lance didn't come with us right then. I mean, you know, it was one of those, you know, he still was under contract to, like you said, to Channel 13, to RKO, and so was Dave. And so I'll never forget, we went over and started our show on Channel 5 with two, I can't remember exactly what their names were, but they just grabbed a couple of guys off of radio.
I think one of them was Clay Conrad, wasn't it?
Clay Conrad, right.
Yep.
And he was going to be our Lance Russell. And then there was another, they put another young guy with him. I'll never forget, Jerry and I were in the back one morning, and these guys knew nothing about wrestling and certainly nothing about hosting a wrestling show or what to say or anything. We just kind of had to throw them out there blind, so to speak. And like the second week or something, it's Clay Conrad, and I can't remember the other guy. It wasn't Clay, but it was the co-host guy with him. He said two guys were in the ring wrestling. He said, "Oh, look at these guys go, Clay. Oh, there's a series of fake kicks. Oh, no, there's a real one." Jared, and I've just almost passed out in the back. We're going, "Oh my God, we please Lance. We got to get Lance and Dave over here quickly, some kind of way." But then that only had to go on for a few weeks, and then Lance got out of his contract, and he and Dave both came over, and boy, the rest was history. We had some great Saturday mornings for almost 20 years. That was, like I said, 77. We went to almost 97, and it was awesome.
Yeah, you guys did have some great days, that's for sure. You know, the one question I've always wanted to ask you, I never asked you before, but what were you thinking when you got the first phone call from Dad at home when you were sending in all your artwork? What were you thinking then when you said, "Well, it's Lance Russell on the phone"?
Oh my gosh, it was like getting a call from the president, or maybe even better. I mean, because, like I said, my dad and I had to be 1960. Had I graduated? I don't know if I did. I think it was probably sometime around 67. I graduated in 1967. So it was sometime around then, or 60. Gosh.
A long time ago.
Yeah, a long time ago. So long ago that I can't exactly remember when. But yeah, it wasn't anything. It's crazy. I was not thinking about, never even thought about being a wrestler. That was not in my mind at all as a kid growing up. Even me and my dad were going to the wrestling matches. I liked it, and we would go home, and you know, kids in the neighborhood would wrestle and that sort of thing in the backyard and everything. But never in my mind did I think about being a wrestler. I was always, I was always thinking about being an artist. And somebody at the matches, I would have to take some of my drawings or either do some drawings sometimes at the time the shows were at the Ellis Auditorium. And so I think some of the other fans saw some of my artwork and they said, "Man, you should send some of those into the TV station." And I thought, I mean, it was somebody else's idea. And I said, "Okay, that's cool. I'll do that." So I gathered up some of my drawings of Jackie Fargo and Tojo Yamamoto and all that sort of stuff. And I didn't know who or where. I just know that, I would hear Lance and Dave say, "Hey, if you want free tickets to Studio Wrestling, you send it to, 485 South Highland, right?"
Yeah, you're right.
485 South Highland, Memphis, Tennessee. That's where the WHBQ studios were. So that was ingrained in my mind. So I just put Lance Russell's name on the envelope, 485 WHBQ, 485 South Highland, Memphis, Tennessee. And I sent, I don't know, five or six or so drawings of the wrestlers. And I don't even know what I was thinking. I just, I did it because some fans suggested it. So I put those in the mail, sent them to the TV station. And then I don't know which was the biggest thrill, the actual call after the show. But when I turned on the TV show that Saturday morning, there, of course, were Lance and Dave sitting at the desk, as they always did, you know, like you said, hello, everybody. Welcome to another Saturday morning. Dave Brown and Lance Russell here, long ringside. And as Lance was sitting there saying that, as the camera widened out a little bit and showed the desk, I could see my artwork, my drawings were sitting on the desk. And that was the craziest thrill of, I mean, the biggest thrill of my life right there. But, oh, my God. There's my drawings. They must be going to show them on the show. And so sure enough, later on, I was sitting there waiting, you know, just biting my nails so much my stomach needed a manicure. And I was just thinking, oh, my gosh, they're going to show. And sure enough, about halfway through the show, Lance reaches over and he picks up the drawings. And he says to Dave, he said, Dave, we got some artwork sent in by a young fan. He looked at the back of the piece and said, young fan out there named Jerry Lawler. And look at these drawings, man. They're really good. We just wanted to show them to everybody and showed one to Jackie and showed one to Tojo Yamamoto and all of this stuff. And that, you know, that was the biggest thrill of my life right there. My drawings being shown on television, which at the time, you know, there was, of course, it was local television, but that was the only television you knew. You know, that was like, I'm thinking the whole world is seeing this. So then, they went back to the wrestling show and did the rest of the show. And I was just on cloud nine that they had shown my artwork. And then, like you said, when the show was over, all of a sudden my phone rings and I pick it up. And there was that unmistakable voice of your dad, Lance Russell, on the other end. And he said, is this Jerry Lawler? And I think I couldn't even speak for a minute. You know, I said, yes, sir. And he said, well, Jerry, this is Lance Russell. And I went, oh my gosh! I didn't know. And he just said, we really liked your drawings, and I've shown them to everybody here. The wrestlers, they really liked them, and I was wondering if you could do us some more, send some more in next week. And I can't even remember what I said afterwards. But of course, that's how it all got started. I started sending some drawings in, and I became sort of like a. You know how you see a court reporter, you know, those artists that are courtroom artists. I became like a ringside artist for the wrestling because at that time they didn't send a TV camera down to the matches to videotape the highlights or anything like that. So Lance and Dave would just come on every Saturday morning and just talk about, like, well, boy, it was a tough match when Jackie Fargo, but he finally got the best of Tojo Yamamoto. And they would just sit and talk about it. So what they finally started doing, they used some of my drawings to sort of illustrate what went on in the matches. And so that's how I became sort of my drawings became kind of a regular on there. And then I got another call from Lance, and he said, hey, you know, everybody's really liking your drawing, and we were just wondering if you'd like to come over and actually be on the show and let everybody see who's doing these amazing drawings. And he said, plus, Jackie Fargo would like to meet you because he's got a club here in Memphis along with Eddie Bond, and they would like to see if you could do some artwork for him on their club. Well, you can imagine. Yo, but gosh, you're right. I was just like, I can believe it. But that's how it all got started, just because Lance called me. I did go over, and I was actually on the show, which was the greatest thing ever. Met Jackie Fargo, who was my all-time hero. And then of course, got to meet Eddie Bond, and we went over and I started doing artwork for Jackie on the club, and that was my first introduction to being actually around a wrestler, and oh my God, it was such a crazy set of circumstances that led me to get to become friends with Jackie Fargo and Eddie Bond. Remember Eddie Bond, the country music singer, country music singer. He did a show right there in Channel 13. Your dad had him on TV every week doing a show, and all of that led into me being what I became today. I mean, you know, it's just none of this would have happened my whole career if Lance Russell hadn't made those phone calls to me.
Wow, unbelievable.
What were some of your favorite? Sean, are you still there, Sean?
I'm still here. I'm just enjoying hearing the classic stories. But I can throw a question in here.
Yeah, please.
Shane, did your dad have some favorite guys to do interviews with on the TV show that he would tell stories about?
Well, you know, of course, his absolute favorite was Jerry. There's no doubt about it. They just had great charisma together, and they worked great together. And I can always remember him saying he never felt comfortable interviewing Joe LeDuc or Randy Savage. He said you never knew what they were going to do, what they were going to say, and he just didn't feel comfortable being, I guess, that close to them.
Well, that's a good too that you mentioned there, because I'm sure he came home and talked about one of the most famous incidents ever was when Lance was interviewing Joe LeDuc and Joe pulled out that hatchet of his or that axe and just sawed away on his arm. You remember that?
Poor Lance.
Yo, do I remember it? I heard about that for a while. You know, dad was really old school when it came to TV, being a program director. You know, he never wanted any bad language or blood or just any, you know, really bad violence on TV, because, you know, that was his job at WHBQ, make sure the movies, you know, fit, you know, the station. And so when Joe came out and did that, I thought Dad was gonna just collapse right there, you know, because here's a guy cutting his arm on TV, and he came home and he was actually mad about it. He did not want that, you know, the show on TV like that. And, you know, and he always would talk about, you know, and I don't know what you guys talked about in the station or not, but, you know, he did not want any profanity on TV at all.
Never.
He was really a stickler about that. So, but yeah, he was real old school when it came to stuff like that.
And when you talk about profanity, one of the things that sticks out in my mind, and I don't know why, I guess because of because of the coronavirus thing, the wrestling company has been doing shows in empty arenas. And so that brought attention back again to the big empty arena match that Terry Funk and I had back in the, I guess, the 80s or something like that at the Mid-South Coliseum. And of course, your dad was such a big part of that. You know, when we started filming that thing, it was just your dad out there. And it was so, I think the thing about Lance, what made him, everybody just love the guy, was he was just so genuine. I mean, I can't think of a better word than just, I mean, what you saw on TV was what you got. I mean, that was Lance. He was genuinely a really good guy. And if you remember that empty arena match, he just, you know, he said, well, I guess turn the cameras on and let's see what we got here. And Lance starts smoking a cigarette. You remember that?
Thing he regrets. He says people used to remind him all the time. I remember that when that video first started running, you were smoking a cigarette. Dad just, he just cringed on that. He just could not believe it.
Yeah, and then of course they said, "Oh, okay, camera's running here. Let me get rid of this cigarette." And of course, then after that, out comes Terry Funk, and Terry Funk just starts, you know, that whole thing was just so unrehearsed or just off the cuff. Nobody knew exactly what was going to happen. That's when I started, you know, Lance smoking a cigarette on the camera, and then all of a sudden, here comes Terry Funk. And he starts calling me a son of a bitch, and I mean all of these words, and you could just see Lance just genuinely hating it. You could just see it on Lance's face. The more Terry cussed, the more Lance was just getting more uncomfortable. And he finally said, "Come on, Terry, we want to be able to use this and show this on TV, but with that kind of language, we're not going to be able to do it." And then of course Terry just cussed again and more.
It got worse. Yeah.
Yeah, it got worse and worse. But that was one of my I don't know. I've like I said, that thing has made its rounds again on Twitter and that on social media lately because of all this empty arena wrestling shows. But that was one of my all time favorite calls by Lance. And then when he called that match, you know, once we started actually wrestling there, he was just awesome. And I mean, you know, to call a match like that by himself, and then of course Terry gets a stick stuck in his eye and screaming, my eye,
my eye.
Yeah, calling for a doctor. I mean, there's just so many. You can go back and think of so many great Lance performances over the years. And
do you remind the guys today at WWE, Jerry, that you were the first one to do an empty arena match?
Oh, I might have dropped that information out there some kind of way.
Oh man.
Yeah. So Lance, you talked about the people he was uncomfortable. Of course, Joe LeDuc is slicing his arm there. If you remember, that was the one about taking an oat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Joe LeDuc, the old Canadian lumberjack, he said, you know, if it's something you want to remind yourself that you need to do, you take an oat. And then you put a scar somewhere on your body. And then every day you see that scar and it reminds you of your oat that you have to get this thing done. He said, so Jerry Lawler, I'm going to put this scar on my body to remind me that every day that I'm going to put you out of wrestling. And all of a sudden, we were watching in the back and Lance is standing there next to him. We had no idea that Joe was going to actually, who would think to take an axe? You wouldn't think it's that sharp, but he just starts sawing on his forearm, and next thing you know, the blood is running down, and you could see Lance's face because I think they only got one shot of the blood coming down from the thing because, like you said, Lance was so adamantly against something like that on TV.
Yeah, he was. You know, another thing, speaking of Joe LeDuc that Dad always used to talk about, he does not know how you survived it. Was the time when Joe threw you from the ring onto his table by ringside.
Yeah. Right in front of Lance. I landed right on his
head. I don't know how Jerry got up from that. That was unbelievable.
Well, if you remember, I really didn't get right up, which I was going to. Eddie Marlin comes running out, and I'm laying there on the floor. I'm right now, as we're talking, I'm feeling down on my leg. And I still have this scar on the side of my upper leg right there where it's like the oath. I feel that scar every single day of my life, and I remember Joe LeDuc every day. I'm feeling it right now. But yeah, when I hit that table, it sliced the muscle in the side of my leg, and I'm laying there, and Eddie Marlin comes running out from the back. And Lance, I remember Lance is leaning over, and he's talking into the microphone, describing what just happened to me. And Eddie Marlin comes, and he leans over, and he says, Jerry Jarrett said, don't get up. That looked too good. And I said, don't worry, I can't get up. I remember I had to go to the hospital after that, and the doctor said it's the worst hematoma I've ever seen in my life. So they had to slice my leg open, and it lasted for a long time. It was the weirdest kind of thing. They put some sort of a thing, almost like a it looked like a shoelace. It was like as long as a shoelace, just this piece of material or something like basically the best way I say it looked like a shoelace, and they just started stuffing it up inside inside my leg where this hematoma was to make it drain. And I had to, like, twice a day I'd have to walk in, this is a gross story, but I have to walk in and stand in front of my toilet and take a pair of scissors and snip off about a half inch of the top of that piece of cloth or lace or whatever that was coming out of my leg. And all of a sudden this gross looking fluid would just come shooting out of that. It was almost like you're standing there peeing into the toilet, but it was coming out of my leg, and it would drain out for, like, I don't know, 3 or 4 minutes, and then it would just stop, and I would just kind of stuff that back into that hole And then, you know, 3 or 4 hours later, I'd come and I'd pull out a little more, like a half inch of it, snip it off, and there would come all that fluid out again. And that went on for like 12 days. I had to have that thing drained before they finally sewed it up. But yeah, that was one of those deals where, like you said, Lance said, I don't know how you survived that. I don't know how I did either, but it was a lot more to it than most people, you know, than what people saw at the time.
Yeah. Hey, did you get to know any of the fans, the regular fans that came every Monday night that were sitting right around ringside at all? Did you?
Well, of course. Yeah, there were certain ones. Of course, Miss Lily. Miss Lily was.
Yeah, Miss Lily. Yeah.
Miss Lily, the little black lady, she went for almost 20 years without missing a Monday night of wrestling. I mean, she would, that was it. You knew. And I think I've been asked about over the years by different wrestling fans. I think I've been asked about Miss Lily more so than any wrestler. People would always say, oh, you remember that little black lady that used to always sit on the ringside? And I said, oh yeah, Miss Lily. She was there every week. She wouldn't miss a show. she would come in a taxi cab every week. And just a couple of stories that I remember about Miss Lily was one time she was on her way to the show. Somebody ran a stop sign and T-boned the cab that she was riding in. And the person in the other car had to go to the hospital. The driver of the cab that Miss Lily was in had to go to the hospital. And she would not allow the ambulance drivers to take her to the hospital. She got another cab to come and pick her up, even though she was banged up, and bring her to the matches straight from the accident.
Wow. And then there.
Oh my gosh. And another time she had a heart attack and was in the hospital, she had had it on like a Wednesday, and she was in the hospital still in there on Monday afternoon. And all of a sudden she got on the phone and called a taxi cab. She pulled all the little wires and stuff off her arm and everything, got up out of bed, got dressed, and went and got in the cab out of the hospital and came to the wrestling.
Golly, Dad, of course, he got to know, you know, everybody came Monday night. He got to know him pretty well. And there was this couple that sat right behind him. I don't know if you remember them or not. But,
of course.
I think it was a bald-headed guy and his wife. I can't think of their name.
They were a little Jewish couple. And you're right. I cannot remember names either, but
they were just the nicest people. Anytime I ever came down Monday night, we talk and how great it was and all this, and they were just so nice and quiet on it. But that lady, when the matches started and she didn't like something, if you go back and listen to some of Dad, you know, when he's calling, you could hear her in the background screaming so loud.
And listen, I'll tell you exactly I can't tell you how many tapes and how many times we talked about, is there any way to turn down the volume of what she's, Lance hated that. But like you said, they were a nice little couple. But here's what she would say every time when the bad guys came out or when the match was going, and it was just almost as loud as Lance's commentary, she would just go like this. She'd go, "Bastard! You bastard! Bastard!" Just, and this is the nicest little old lady that you would ever come across ever. But when the matches started, "Bastard! You bastard!" And just over for the entire match, she would scream that. It was crazy.
I never forget the first time I ever came down there. She, you know, my dad introduced me to her. She's, "Oh, how old are you? What school do you go to?" And asked me all these nice little questions. Then when the matches started, she started that screaming. And I looked at Dad in the interview. I said, "Dad, what's going on with this lady behind me?" He said, "Hey, I got to listen to it every Monday night."
Every Monday night. And they didn't. They were like Miss Lily. They did not miss a time. I mean, they were every week. Yeah,
there was another lady there, too, that used to talk to Dad all the time. And every time he'd walk by, she would always go, "Lance, your wife called, wants you to bring home some milk for the baby." And then he walked back and said, "Lance, your wife called, needs you to bring home a paper," you know, or just something like
that. Oh, my gosh.
But they love Dad. And I tell you what, and I try to tell people this, Dad loved the fans. I mean, it was all about the fans. And I tell this story, Jerry, and I don't know if you've heard me tell or not, but you remember there was a thing going on over at Minglewood. You know, Dad was probably, I don't know, 89 or 90 at the time, and back was killing him. He had a lot of bad arthritis, and he and Dave were invited down there. Well, as the show was ending, Dad looked at me and he goes, "Come on, we're going out front. We're going to thank everybody for coming."
Yeah.
I said, "Dad, guy, you sure you don't want to sit down? I know your back's killing." He goes, "No, come on, let's go."
Yeah.
Man, he drugged me out there, and everybody that walked by, he said, "Hey, thanks for coming. I really appreciate it." I couldn't believe it. And I mean, that right there just goes to show you how much he thought of the fans of wrestling.
Yeah, that was, I remember that show exactly. That was a show that my son Kevin put on at Minglewood Hall,
right.
And he brought back every kind of legend that he could. And you're right, Lance and Dave were there, and that's why I say when I think of Memphis wrestling, and I think when most people think of Memphis wrestling, Lance Russell and Dave Brown were the constants. They were the cornerstone of the show. You know, wrestlers would come and go, but those guys were there every single week,
yeah.
and that's the guys that made Memphis wrestling to all the fans. It wasn't just me; it was to all the fans, and that's why. And it's one of the things I said a while ago. Lance was just a genuine, good person, and everybody knew that. It came across on TV, and that's one of the reasons, like you said, that he would want to get up and go and shake hands with the people. He did. He loved the fans. It was great. He knew that the fans is what made. You know, that made him and made wrestling,
right.
And he appreciated it.
I tell you another thing I tell people, and they can't believe it, but you remember the Comic-Con that y'all did in Evansville, Indiana?
Oh, yes.
And my mom had been sick for years, and she had passed. And I said to Dad, I said, "Dad, why don't we get you back involved in wrestling and let's get you back in touch with the fans and all that?" And he was a little hesitant. He kept saying, "Yeah, it was a long time ago. Nobody remember me or anything like that." Well, we get a call from the guy who was running it.
His name, the guy's, listen, if you remember, his name was Dave Osborne. Dave Osborne.
Was it Dave or Jeff? Jeffrey.
You know what? Maybe it was. You're right. I think it is Jeff.
Yeah, you're right. So, yeah.
And
he called. I get this.
Listen, I know Jeff listens to the podcast. So, Jeff, I'm sorry. You're right. It was Jeff.
Oh. So Jeff called. It was called
a PopCon.
PopCon. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So Jeff calls. He says, "Hey, we'd love to have your dad come up." And so I said, "Well, let me talk to Dad, see what he wants to do." And Dad, when I told him about it, he goes, why would they want me up there? I wasn't a wrestler. They don't remember me. They don't. You know, nobody remembers me up there. And,
oh, man.
And I said, "Dad," I said, and I started showing him some of the YouTube videos that's all over you. I said, "Dad, here you are. You're all over this." He goes, "Okay, well, we'll go up there and just see what it's all about." And he was real reluctant about going. You know, he just, nobody's going to remember me. Nobody's going to see me. I tell you, Jerry, I don't know if you remember or not, but he was just so overwhelmed at the fans that came by to see him. And we weren't prepared. We didn't really have anything, you know, to sign. And heck, he was signing, you know, ties and shirts and skin and everything. We really didn't have anything, you know, pictures or anything like that. And he just couldn't believe the people that came by to see him and say hello to him.
Yeah, I think I remember that just like it was yesterday. I think that's one of the things that Lance especially and probably Dave kind of, I don't know if they took it for granted, but just didn't really think about the fact that show that we did in Memphis every Saturday morning, you know, was bicycled around to our territory at the time. You know, it showed, we would do it live every Saturday morning in Memphis. And then a week later, that same show would show in Louisville, Kentucky, Evansville, Indiana, Lexington, Kentucky, Nashville, Tennessee, Jonesboro, Arkansas. It would show in different, you know, in different locales all around our territory. And so Lance and Dave, you know, they were as big a stars in all of these other cities as they were in Memphis, because those people, when they turned on their TV and like up in Evansville, Indiana, every Saturday morning, you know, it was like Lance and Dave they were as big of stars in that city as they were down in Memphis. And all of those people came to know him and love him all through all the years. And that was a huge deal for Lance to all of a sudden. That may have been the only appearance that I can remember Lance making out in public in Evansville, Indiana, ever. And so, you know, those fans just came out in droves to see Lance Russell in person. And it would have been that way in Louisville or Lexington, Kentucky. And as a matter of fact, you know, one time our Saturday morning show that Lance and Dave were on was syndicated and shown in 160 different cities every single week. So I don't think Lance ever realized I'm sure he thought about it some, but you know, because he didn't travel that much around, he didn't realize how popular he and Dave were throughout the country, throughout the rest of the country. And still today, you know, still with social media, you hear it, you see it. People that have seen Lance or Dave in whatever city their home city was at the time have moved out to different places. I mean, Lance Russell is when you talk about commentators, wrestling commentators, he's as big a name as there was, you know, as big a name as Gorilla Monsoon or anybody that you want to talk about, you know, Bobby the Brain Heenan, Lance right. Russell is right there with those guys.
Right. Yeah. He did toward the end of his life. I think he finally realized, you know, how popular he was. I kept showing him the YouTube videos, and you know, we created a Facebook site for him, and yep. he just couldn't believe all the people that came to it and made comments and loved anything he had to say. And so he realized it at the end, you know, how much he was loved and respected in the business for what he did. And, well, I was really glad to see that.
That's great that you did all that to make him aware of that, because I would hate it if he didn't realize that. He was just so loved and still is to this day by new fans discovering Memphis wrestling. He just had a presence on that show pretty much unlike any TV wrestling announcer ever.
Yeah, and I was just trying to think, you know, you mentioned that he talked about Macho Man Randy Savage, and of course Randy was so unpredictable. He certainly wasn't hard to work with, because all you had to do was, in Lance's case, just hold the microphone out there and you know, Randy's going to take over and everything. And then of course Joe LaDuke, but some of the other guys that Lance worked really well with, Jimmy Hart. What about Jimmy Hart? Do you remember? Did Lance ever come home? Were you around when Jimmy Hart threw the powder on or the flour on Lance?
The flour, yeah. Dad tells a story about that. He said he knew that Jimmy was, you know, going to like sprinkle him with a little flour, but he had no idea that he was going to dump the whole bag on him. And then of course my mom was furious over that because it ruined the suit.
And then Lance and Dave were real upset too, not overly over the suit, but apparently that flour, you know, was all in the air and it got into the cameras, you know, those big upright cameras. I don't know if it damaged the cameras, but they were real upset about that. But Lance and Jimmy Hart had some great, one of my all-time favorite things to watch of Lance is when Lance got in between Jimmy Hart and Andy Kaufman. And it was Lance was part of creating the greatest non-fight ever on Memphis TV. Each one of those guys was swinging. Neither one of them landed a punch, but Lance was holding them apart. That was great.
His dad tried to break him up, and these guys are just like got their head down and just swinging their arms wildly. And yeah, it was pretty funny.
What about Dream Machine when Dream Machine came out and grabbed Lance?
That was a total shock to Dad on that one. He had no idea that was going to happen, and he was a little hot about that too. He didn't like to get manhandled by that. I think wasn't there a rule though that supposedly don't touch the announcers, whatever.
Well, that was just it was sort of an unspoken rule. I mean, they were, and especially Dave. Dave's was not unspoken. Dave was spoken. He said to tell everybody, hey, I can't be a part of any of this because Dave was so worried about his credibility, which he rightfully so, as the weatherman. You know, yeah. I mean, he was had to be the one of the most trusted voices and personalities in the entire market, because he was the most popular and trusted and relied upon weatherman. You know, so people had to believe what Dave said. So he was just real reluctant to get involved in a wrestling angle. But of course, Lance was there as well. But you know, you just, I don't know. We like you said, it was an unwritten rule to not touch the announcers. But
yeah,
that's why when something like that did happen, it was so, you know, it was so out of the ordinary. It was such a big deal. And for Dream Machine to come out, Dream Machine was really hot that day too, for some reason. And when he came out and grabbed Lance, he took Lance right down to the ground with, by his lapels. And we were all shocked in the back. And you could see it was Jimmy Hart. Jimmy was trying to pull Dream Machine back, and you could tell that Jimmy was panicking and as well. Then another time, do you remember the time that Tojo threatened Lance and Lance got picked up that hammer?
It's funny you mentioned it. I was just going to say that was another one that I was telling Dad about, and he had forgotten all about it. And I showed him that the YouTube clip of it, and he just couldn't believe it. He said, I can't believe I did that.
Oh man, he picked up the hammer that he used to ring the bell with, and he picked that hammer up and he told Tojo, he said, there's no doubt that you could beat me up, Tojo, but I'll tell you what, if you come at me, I'm going to get one lick in. He said, one lick. He said, I promise you, I'm going to get one lick with this hammer. I'm going to hit you right between your eyes. And he meant it.
Yeah, he did. He did. That was, it's funny. As Dad got older, he couldn't remember some of the things that went on. And once I went back and showed him on YouTube, he just shake his head. Just, I can't believe I did that, or I can't believe they did that, or whatever it was, you know. So, it was funny.
One of my favorite all-time memories with Lance, of course, was the Christmas show where he and I exchanged outfits, and he put out, that was when I was doing
you were the general or something like that.
Yeah, I was the general. I had Lawler's army, and I was wearing a goofy helmet out there, and so Lance put on one of my Tarzan tops, and I had this riding crop, and he put on the helmet and the riding crop and one of my Tarzan tops, and I think my wrestling boots. Oh my gosh, it was the funniest sight ever. And then I had this big nose, this big plastic nose that I put on and put on Lance's, tried to put on Lance's suit. And I interviewed him, and that was part of our Christmas show.
Who came up with that idea?
Who knows? I don't know. back in the day, it was, I mean, you know, back in the day, like on that, we had to do, I think it was either Christmas Eve or Christmas Day was on a Saturday. And of course we couldn't have the ring and couldn't have all the wrestlers in there on the show. So we went ahead and we taped the Saturday morning Christmas show a day or two early. And we just had me and Lance, and I think Jarrett was there. We were the only two that was actually in the studio for the show, and all the rest of the stuff, we had clips from different wrestlers. I'll never forget. We had Jackie Fargo and his family, and that was one of the first times that The Rock was ever on television. We had sent our camera crew out to Rocky Johnson's house, and Rocky and his wife Ada were there, and the little Dewey, Rocky Johnson kept calling Dewey. That was what Rocky called The Rock, and he was maybe 3 or 4 years old or something like that. And he was, you know, they did this interview a few days before Christmas, but during the interview they were saying it's Christmas morning, and all of a sudden Dewey was wanting to open the presents. And of course, it was, and Rocky Johnson kept saying, "Yeah, come on, dude, come on, no, we're not going to open them yet." But that was, I think, The Rock's first time on TV. But yeah, that was Lance Russell and I were the only two actually in the studio for the show that day.
Yeah, Did Dad ever tell you the story about when he picked Andre the Giant up at the airport?
No. I'm sure he did at the time, because that was the one thing, I don't know, that was the one thing when Andre came into your territory, which he didn't come very often, maybe once a year, but nobody wanted to have to, everybody loved Andre, but nobody wanted to have him get in their car. So what, Lance had to pick him up?
So this was like in the, mid-70s, I guess it was. And at that time, we had like one of these conversion vans that Mom drove around, you know, with the kids and all that. And Dad said, hey, I'm going to take the van to pick Andre up. That way he can sit in the back and stretch out and have plenty of room. And so he goes to get Andre, and Andre comes to the van, and Dad opens up the side door to let him in. Andre, I thought you'd sit back there. He goes, no, I'll sit up front with you. Dad goes, you sure? You sure don't want to sit in the back? Yeah, and he stretch out. The guy goes, Andre says, no, I'll sit up front with you. I said, okay. You know, you don't tell Andre where to sit. But
right, exactly.
So he gets in the van. And he reaches down to pull the lever to let the seat back. And next thing you know, he breaks it right off the rail when he pushes back to get the seat back.
Right.
And my mom was so mad when he got home and said, honey, I hate to tell you this, but Andre broke the seat. Oh, she was livid over that.
Oh,
man.
That was the thing. I mean, whenever Andre, you know, you had to get him around from town to town, but nobody wanted to. I mean, he would literally, he would literally ruin whoever's car he was riding in. It would either mess up the shocks or ruin the seat or whatever. I mean, that was just so I'm sure that I don't know how we conned Lance into picking him up in that van, because nobody wanted to put him in a regular car. He couldn't fit.
Yeah, man. But you know, another guy Dad loved to interview was Handsome Jimmy. He just loved talking to Jimmy.
Man, oh man. I'm just picturing in my mind just different guys that Lance had great interviews with. And you're right, Handsome Jimmy was. Handsome Jimmy was one of the best. Austin Idol was one of the best.
How about some of the ones that early on that couldn't talk their way through an interview and Dad had to help them on? You know, I think if you look back in the early YouTube days, you know, Hulk Hogan, when he first came in, that was a tough interview to watch, you know?
Oh, you're right. Exactly. Yeah. But that was what was so great about Lance. He could, he could help guys. He could make up for the fact that they weren't used to being in front of the camera yet. And you're right. The very first TV interviews that Hulk Hogan made were right there on Memphis TV. And if you remember, Hulk brought with him the guy that later on became Brutus the Barber Beefcake. But he was calling him, Ziggy Hogan or something like that, like it was his brother. And poor guy, he was so green at the time. That I do remember that interview. That was like poor Lance. It was like pulling teeth to try to get an interview out of Hulk Hogan and Ziggy Hogan. They're like their first time on Memphis TV. It was crazy.
Dundee was a little rough at first, yeah, right?
Oh yeah. What about Dundee, Shane?
Dundee, Dad tells the story that, you know, Dundee was awfully green when he and George Barnes first came over. Yeah, but you know, guy, look where Billy turned out, one of the best, you know, at doing interviews. Jimmy Cornette, I mean, you look at the first time he came out. Oh my gosh, that was a tough one to watch as well.
Yeah, and look at Cornette now. You can't shut him up.
Yeah, you can't shut him up, man. Oh,
there were
man.
So many.
Yeah, it was
like
great time.
Sting and Ultimate Warrior, and how green they were when they were first in Memphis. He was the master of helping people out like that.
Yeah, I remember. I mean,
yeah, what was it? What was that tag team name that they were?
The Blade Runners.
Yes.
Yeah. And just, you know, as you're talking about it, Sean, as you're saying these different names, I'm just thinking, picturing in my mind you know, some of the first guys that made that, you know, that came through Memphis TV, that Lance had the, I don't know, probably wouldn't be called the privilege at the time. It was tough work on Lance, but Lance, you know, Lance helped make some of these guys with his commentary when they, you know, they really weren't there yet. I mean, they weren't, you know, they were green as gourds, but Lance's commentary, I'll never forget, like, you know, Mark Calloway, the Undertaker, you know, Lance calling his first match with me there on TV when we bring this guy out. And I'll never forget, Lance would be in the back and, you know, Lance would help Jerry and I come up with ideas for things for these different guys to say on TV. And then, you know, I don't remember. I do think that was one of my ideas to say that this, that, Mark had just gotten out of a prison down in Atlanta and he had beaten up two guys, maybe beaten two guys to death. They were pushing up daisies or something like that. But, you know, we'd give Lance an idea of what these guys were going to say. And then if they got out there and couldn't pull it off, Lance was always there to help them, you know.
He was basically doing on the mic what you had to do in the ring with the same guy sometimes.
Yeah, we, you know what, though? I can guarantee you Lance the same way. That was just that was a fun part of our job. You know, that was what we did. I mean, we loved that, and I'm sure Lance did as well. I mean,
on that same thought process, Jerry. You know, I used to ask Dad all the time. You know, before he passed, I said, you know, why did you keep some of these old programs? Because every Monday night he had every program there was. Why didn't you, you know, do this or that? He would look at me and say, you know, back then we had no idea what it was. It was just a job to us. It was something we did every Saturday or Monday night, and we didn't think it was going to be what it is today. And
right.
And that's why, I mean, I guess that's why, you know, like what a lot of the tapes, early tapes, Jerry, I guess they're nowhere to be found, I guess, because, you know, they got rid of them all. Or
oh, my gosh. What would happen back in Lance's day when we were on Channel 13, the reason you can't find those tapes is because nobody at the time had the foresight to think, oh, someday this stuff will be worth something. You're right, just like Lance said. This was just our one-day-a-week job that we came in and did the TV show. We didn't think about the future of how someday this was going to – people would like to go back and look at this or anything. We taped over. We'd buy these big tapes. I'll never forget, they cost $75. These big old tapes, they were 2 inches wide, and they were probably a foot. They were probably a foot square. I mean, you know, this big roll of tape, and that's what we would tape the TV show on every Saturday morning, and then the following Saturday, you could go over and retape it right over that same tape. So instead of buying a new $75 tape every week, we would just retape, and then the old show from last week was gone. You know, that's, we would just tape over stuff. It just like the old, you know, the old VHS videotapes. You could tape over things back in the day, and that's what we used to do. That and that's why very little of that stuff exists to this day, because nobody had the foresight to want to save that stuff.
Yeah, exactly right. You know, another one, Jerry, that, I got to brag on my dad, but if you listen to it, is the Tupelo concession stand brawl.
Oh, the best.
You listen to from the point when the match ended in the ring to it got over, and listen to him talk to, I can't think of the camera guy's name now.
Was it Mike Shields?
What was his name? Mike Shields, yeah. You know, talking to Mike about, hey, Mike, I think something's going on back here, you know, and Dad, I think it was the first time and only time he ever said a bad word on that you could hear on TV, but he said something like damn or something like that, you know, but when he tripped over a cord or something like that, but just his conversation when the screen went black and him building it up to they get to where they can show the thing, I just thought was brilliant.
I never forget his exact words. Like you said, when the screen went black, Mike Shields was the cameraman. And he said, "Hey, Mike, get the camera. They got a hell of a fight going on down here." And that was just like that was what that for Lance to say a hell of a fight was so out of character that the people knew that, hey, this is a real deal going on right here.
Yeah. And I don't know how you guys did it, but man, that's just known, I think, nationwide, you know, the Tupelo concession stand brawl. It's just, we would always pass Tupelo going up when we drove up to Memphis, and Dad always would say, they need to put a sign up here, the home of the Tupelo concession stand brawl, you know, right next to Elvis Presley birthplace.
It's funny that you mentioned that. I just put out a tweet just the other day a little bit of the highlights of Lance and me and Terry Funk at the Empty Arena match, and I captioned it, and I said, this match, along with the Andy Kaufman match, was probably two of the most memorable matches of my entire career. And then almost every one of the answers to that tweet, people said, what about the Tupelo concession stand match? It was like, you know, I guess if I had to pick out three matches, that would have to be it. Me and Lance at the Empty Arena with Terry Funk, the Andy Kaufman match, which of course Lance called that, and then of course the Tupelo concession stand match, which Lance called as well, you know. And then what about when Lance, when we went out to do the movie? Lance and I'll never forget, Lance and Audra went out to do the Andy Kaufman movie, you know, with Jim Carrey and everything. Yeah, that was, I know that was a thrill for Lance.
He had such a great time. It was just unbelievable. Just, you know, of course, being in the movie and then meeting everybody. And he talked about that just all the time. What a special time that was to be out there. So, that was something.
Yeah, we had... Me and Lance and your mom and dad, or me and Lance and your mom had our own trailer. It was awesome. So we were like real big movie stars. It was really a cool experience there. And he loved meeting Jim Carrey and getting the pictures with Jim Carrey and everybody. What was the other?
He used to talk about how Jim Carrey would never get out of character. He always wanted to stay in character. As Andy Kaufman.
Yeah, I know, you know, you can see, I think there are some clips of Lance as well in that Netflix movie, Jim and Andy,
right.
The Great, where it shows the backstage, shows everything that went on backstage during that movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
What else? You got anything else? I mean, we could sit here and talk for months about Lance Russell. He was the best, man.
How was that going to Raw and getting to see the current crop of talent and everybody for you guys?
Oh, I tell you, that just worked out perfectly, too. We had gone up there, I think, for a show or something, and it just so happened Raw was coming in Monday night. And Jerry, thank you so much for inviting us down there. But Dad just... Of course, he had never seen anything like that firsthand. And when we left there, he just couldn't believe, you know, the production and just everything that went on. But what a thrill it was for him to get introduced by you, Jerry, to walk out on stage. And he did his old, hello again, everyone.
Oh, yeah.
I think the crowd loved it. What a pop it was. And just for him to sit there and be a part of that, he just thoroughly enjoyed it. I'm glad he was able to see it. He wanted to do one other thing before he passed. He wanted to see a WrestleMania, which he was never able to do. But we would always see Michael Hayes lived. His mom lived down here in Pensacola, and I would always see Michael Hayes on a plane coming in, or we would be out to dinner. We run into Michael, and Michael would always say, Lance, I'm going to get you to the next WrestleMania, man. Don't worry. We're going to get you there. And of course it never happened, but Dad always wanted to go to one of those.
Yeah. I remember the night that, you guys came to the Raw there in Memphis. And, it was so funny because I went back and I asked Vince, about being able to introduce Lance to the crowd. And he said, oh my gosh, yes. And Vince wanted to meet Lance as bad as Lance wanted to meet Vince and Michael Cole as well. All those guys, you know, that was their first chance to actually get to meet Lance Russell. And that was a bigger thrill for them than it was for Lance to meet those guys.
Oh, it was great. Yeah, Dad got to say hello to John Cena. And, then, of course, he saw Dirty Dutch and Downtown Bruno and Paul Lee. Hadn't seen those guys in ages.
Yeah.
And good catching up with them, too, as well.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. What else? Sean, there was something else. We were going to talk about something else.
You know, another funny thing that I don't know if you remember this, Jerry, or not, but the very first show that Dad came back, a wrestling show, was in, I think your son was putting it on, Brian, was at Tupelo, at the casino, the Resorts Casino, I think it was.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And Dad came back. It was the first one. He came back, and he was so nervous about going out in front of the crowd and, you know, having the mic in his hand, and, you know, and you and me and him were backstage, and we were talking about it, you know, what we were going to say and all that. And you could see the look on Dad's face that he was real worried about it. And you and I kind of looked at each other like, okay, well, hopefully this will go well. Well, you guys walk out on that stage, and you put that microphone in his hand, and it was like he never lost a beat. You looked at me back on the stage, and you just kind of went like, hey, what's there to worry about?
Yeah, I remember it well. That was in Tunica at the Resorts Casino, and
Tunica. Yeah,
and you and I were thinking. I mean, I was just thinking, why on earth would I don't know? I could just never picture Lance being nervous about being in front of a crowd or being on TV. But like you said, he was genuinely concerned or whatever. But man, as soon as he got the mic in his hand, it was the old Lance Russell right there. It never left. He was great.
I tell you, and it happened everywhere we went from then on. If you put a mic in his hand, it just all of it came back, and he knew what to say. He knew how to act. It was just, you know, second nature. So.
Yeah. I wish we'd have had, and I'm sure he'd have been glad to come on. I'll have to get him on to talk about Lance too, but should have had Dave Brown on here today, because what a lifelong relationship those two had, and what a great tag team they were. What a great commentary duo, Lance Russell and Dave Brown. Just unbelievable.
Yeah, good. I mean, you know, just good friends, good work partners. I think they both have said, you know, the whole time they're never had a disagreement, never had a crossword, nothing. Just, I can't say enough about Dave Brown. He was just a great guy and a great friend to Dad, and always love him for that.
And I think just as a viewer, that friendship came through the screen so much, and it just gave the whole show this warm and inviting feel where you'd see the statue spinning and then be the two of them there smiling, and it just felt, you know, you could feel it, the realness of the warmth there, and it was just fun. It was just like you got to spend an hour watching the show with your two friends.
Well, that's yeah. You know, that's the one thing I always looked up to and admired Lance, and when I started doing commentary, just people don't realize, I mean, that was when I really had such a, I don't know, it was a appreciation for what Lance and Dave did every week all through those years, because it's not easy. You know, I just saw on Twitter this morning, I guess, they didn't have Jim Ross on the AEW show this week, for the same reason they haven't had me on the WWE shows for the past couple of weeks, because of this concern about the coronavirus. There's nothing wrong with either one of us, but you know, there's just concern, and they're having to do things with a limited skeleton crew at these shows. But apparently, I guess Cody Rhodes and Tony Schiavone did the commentary on the AEW show, and I saw a tweet from Cody Rhodes this morning saying, oh my gosh, I never realized how hard doing commentary was. I can't wait till good old JR gets back. And that was the first thing that I realized, you know, once I started doing it back in the mid-90s. I've just had a new appreciation for what Lance did all those years, because people just don't, they just don't realize how difficult it can be. And the one thing that I took from Lance and Dave was what you just said, Sean. It was like two buddies, two good friends sitting there watching the matches. And that's the way I had such good chemistry with JR. That's the way I always looked at it with JR. I put all the other stuff out of my mind, and I just thought, like, here I'm going to watch this, and I'm going to treat this like I'm sitting in my den with on the couch with my good best friend JR here, and we're watching a wrestling show, and we're talking about it to each other. And that's the way I think Lance and Dave did, and that's what I tried to emulate from those guys through my commentary career, you know.
Yeah. Dad had that great gift of being able to ad-lib, and he was never at a loss for words, and just he knew the right thing to say, and he was just good at it.
Yeah, you're right.
And you're right. I think as fans would say, Lance was so believable. It was like watching your grandfather, talk to you or somebody. No, he heard that a lot from the fans.
Yeah, when you watch something like that open to the empty arena match, it is. It's like legitimately great acting. It's just so human and real feeling. And that authenticity just lends itself so much to the believability of the entire wrestling product.
Well, guys, Shane, I'm sorry. I think we've taken up enough of your day. We actually need to tell the fans out there listening that we called Shane a day early. He thought he was expecting us to do this tomorrow with him. And we thank you for taking up your time today. We could talk, like I said, we could talk about your dad forever.
I love it. One of my favorite subjects, Lance Russell and wrestling, Memphis wrestling is a love to talk about.
Well, Shane, listen, thank you for being here. We're gonna call you back sometime and have you back on, because, like I said, there's thousands of stories that we could come up with and just expound on about Lance and all the different, like Sean and you both said, we could go back and look at YouTube for 15 minutes and come on back, do 3 hours or 3 hours of podcast about stuff we've seen Lance do, you know. So we'll have you back again, okay, Shane?
Oh, thank you guys so much. I certainly appreciate it. And you guys stay well and, watch this virus thing. So be careful.
Hey, I don't want to impose on the guest, but do you want to do a close for us?
Hey, this is Shane Russell for Jerry Lawler. Goodbye and good day and good luck, everybody.